Welcome to Wild Hearts at Work, a podcast redefining our relationship with work through stories and conversations with wild hearts who have dared to challenge the status quo. And now, here's your host, Melissa Boggs.
Hello, friends, and welcome back to the Wild Hearts at Work podcast. I am your host, Melissa Boggs. I am so excited to have you back this week. This week, we get to get into something really interesting and just lights my fire for sure. I am really excited to invite to the podcast Shoshana French, who is the founder of Simple Spirit. She is an intuition expert, and I am so looking forward to having this conversation about intuitive decision making and what it looks like to follow your intuition at work and a million other topics, because I feel like Shoshana is someone that I could talk to for like 6 hours. So let's see what we can do in 40 minutes. Welcome to the podcast, Shoshana.
Hi, I am super excited to be here and just excited about our conversation, like the little brief conversation we had before we came here. We had a great conversation when we were just getting to know each other. So I'm excited.
It's always fun because I always wonder if I should also record those intro conversations, because especially for the folks that, you know, I didn't previously know, sometimes those intro conversations are just as rich as the podcast itself. So I don't know, maybe there's something there I need to follow.
Like back of the house, you know, what do they call
yeah.
that?
Yeah. Off well, behind the scenes.
Yes, behind the scenes. That's what I was thinking of.
This is not a pitch, but I do have a Patreon. So maybe that's the type of thing we need to put on the Patreon, the behind the scenes. Great. So I have a fun, interesting question to kick us off. So on your website, one of the first things that you see is an intuitive assessment. So can you tell me a little bit about that assessment and like just a couple of the things that I might answer if I'm trying to take this assessment, figure out if I am an intuitive?
Yeah. So I'll say first, for your listeners, excuse me, it's helpful for me to define what intuition is, because people define intuition differently. So before I tell you what's in the assessment, I'll tell you that everyone is intuitive. All of us are born intuitive. We all have the nuts and bolts for it. We have the natural ability. I really relate to intuition like it's a hard skill. So, you know, just like you can become a better writer, just like you can become a better, you know, concrete thinker, critical thinker, you can become better at using and understanding your intuition. So I just want to say that first. How I define intuition is a direct way of knowing or understanding something without the requirement of analyzing data. That's intuition.
Ooh. Okay. Let's say that one more time.
Of course. So intuition is a direct way of knowing or understanding something that doesn't require data.
So I just know this, like I sense it without having to kind of like overthink it, essentially.
Yeah. I mean, I've talked to thousands and thousands of people, and it always, like, it's fun. I love those stories, right? Like when people, my dad calls it his metaphysical moment, which my dad's a big old biker. So when he says like, this is that metaphysical moment, you know, but it, like everyone I've ever talked to has at least one experience where they were very clear. It was their intuition. And when they hear that definition, they go, oh yeah, no, I've had that experience before. And then they'll tell me a story. And I've heard a lot of stories. So yeah, it's, you know, when you meet someone the first time and you just get this feeling of like icky, uncomfortable, like, I don't know. And you're like, I'm going to backpedal and try to get out of this horrible first date, even though nothing's happened yet. It's also the same as, you know, I've watched entrepreneurs do it a lot. I've also watched people do it inside of business as an employee in all realms, but you just know something, like your boss tells you to do something, you look at it and you go, this isn't like, I'm looking at it. It doesn't look right. And you're like, I don't know why, but this doesn't look right. And then you find out that you're correct and that what they gave you was wrong, like the wrong specs or, you know, the wrong colors, like RPG colors or whatever they're called, like all of that kind of stuff. Right. So it doesn't require data. Now, when I say data, people think numbers, and that's not all I mean by data. Data is the accumulation of information. So accumulation of information can look like how you were educated, your family experience, you know, to use a big word, indoctrination, like really, like all of those things that formulate who you become and how you operate in the world so that it works. So, you know, if, for example, if you were taught that as an employee, your job is to do what your boss tells you.
Oof.
Right? Like
I'm allergic to that.
Of course you are. Look what your podcast is called. But if you were trained to do that, and then you notice that your boss was sexually harassing every woman on the sales team, you may not say anything, even though some like in you, it feels wrong. It doesn't feel right, but you've been trained to not question authority, whatever that authority is. I mean, before we hit record, I was talking about, you know, people who go to doctors and they get data from a doctor. They trust the doctor because the doctor is the authority, right? They're practicing medicine. Notice that word, practicing medicine, but they get information from their doctor and they trust it. And then they get a second opinion later for whatever reason, find out that first doctor didn't actually know what they were talking about. They got misdiagnosed and they have huge problems. So I find that when people take this hard skill called intuition and they begin to train it and they allow themselves to begin to trust something that they did when they were younger, whether it's when they were little kids or really before we are starting to be trained to not trust our own authority. And what I mean by that is like your bodily autonomy, like, you know, what feels good and you know, what doesn't, you know, when you're tired and when you're not, you know, when you trust someone and when you don't. You know, like stranger danger. I'm 45. So I got those books in the early 80s where we don't trust strangers. And what I would do was I totally ignored that lesson. Like I would just trust the people that felt trustworthy to me. And there's, my mom tells all kinds of stories about, I would walk up to total strangers and have conversations with them, even as a child, because it felt okay to do that. So the test, so we're bringing it all the way back to the test. So the test is something I designed to, it's like an intuitive personality test. It allows people to get a map of how their intuitive intelligence works. So the kind of questions it asks are questions like, you don't need to, like, in order for me to make a decision, I just have to see my options because one will look right. Or I don't, like when I need to make a decision, I just know what feels right. When I make a decision, I'm more like, I know which one's right. So it asks questions like that about decision-making, how you currently make decisions. It asks questions about if you tend to be more emotionally oriented or more mentally oriented or more physically oriented. So those are the kind of things that are in that test. And then at the end, you get this, you know, printout that like tells you how your intuition works. So then you can, it makes it easier to hear it, right? Because you're like, okay, wait, like some mysterious thing in my head, I'm supposed to listen to that and not to that you should listen to doctors because they know what they're talking about.
So does that mean that there are different ways that your intuition shows up? And so we might always think about it as that voice in our head, but it might actually be like you alluded to earlier, this shot of adrenaline that I get, you know, is like my body trying to tell me something. That's my intuition too. So are there different ways that it shows up that people maybe don't immediately think about because it's not what's in the movies or whatever?
Yeah. People often think of like, I find that people sometimes think of intuition as like having like that moment of kismet where they, you know, see an image in their head and they're like, oh, now I know this is the person that I'm meant to be, whatever. That's one way that intuition works. Some people, how their body translates their inner wisdom is through seeing things. Like you're thinking of someone, you see them in your, like literally see their face in your mind. And then you look down and they're calling you or they're texting you. Some people just know things. Like they have a knowing and You know, when for me, that's part of my, like how my intuition works is I know things. So when I walked into this house, the house that we bought last year during COVID, it like, I knew this was the house that we were going to buy. We had like 8 other houses we were going to be going and looking at, but I knew this was the one, not for any other reason than when I walked in, I just knew it. There was literally no evidence. It wasn't related to the price or the neighborhood or anything, just like walked in and just knew it. Some people are feelers, like they get more of a sense of feeling. My husband is a feeler. And so when he meets people for the very first time, he can often feel in his body their mood, mm-hmm. like without even them saying a word or really seeing, like, you know, they're smiling and you're like, oh, they're fine. And he's like, he's like, that person is super stressed out. And I'm like, which person are you talking about? And I'm like, they don't look stressed out, but like he feels it. And then like 30 seconds later, they're like, oh, today is the worst day. And I'm like, he didn't know it. He didn't see it. He felt it. Mm-hmm. And then the last one is some people hear stuff. Like they can hear, one of my aunts was like the best BS meter ever because she could hear when people were lying. And you know, someone could hear this and make an argument for, well, isn't that what profilers do? Or people who are like cops or investigators or the FBI, they're trained to, you know, listen for the inflection in the voice or the, you know, they can see the pulse in the throat. That's how I know. But literally my aunt could hear you lying across the house. She could just hear it. She's like, nope, come here right now.
You're like, well, darn it.
Right. So yes, intuition shows up differently for different people. And it even can show up differently for you, depending on, you know, what you're kind of sensing or tapping into or are curious about.
So I'm totally intrigued by this assessment now, and I haven't taken it yet. So as soon as we hang up, that's going to be happening. I want to go back to something you said earlier, because it was already sort of on my list of things to talk about, which is, why do we ignore it? And what is it about society? This could be a hot topic, but this shows up at work a lot, that has told us not to trust that. And sorry, I'm doing that thing I hate where you ask a question, then you add more. But one more thing, especially in this world of like data-driven decision-making.
Yep.
That's what kept coming up for me when you were talking about like, not everything is numbers, mm-hmm. right? So what is it that makes us run away from our intuition or has caused us to be trained to ignore it in your experience?
Well, first, I think it's helpful to define what is data-driven decision-making good for. So data-driven decision-making is really good for solving problems. That's the focus. Or avoiding making a mistake you've made before or avoiding a mistake somebody else has made. So data-driven. So to answer your question, what the kind of society we live in is what some anthropologists call domineering culture, dominant culture. Some people call it patriarchy. I mean, it's some people get a little twisted up about that word because they think we're saying that we hate men or something like that. And it's not about that. However, that dominating or domineering culture is really about, it's about force. It's about competition. It's about winning. And so all of those things really need if it's about winning, it's about data. How do you measure how you win? Mm-hmm. Now, you know, if we got real woo-woo, there are people who believe that we are in different ages, right? So we just began the age of Aquarius. That's an astrological thing. And in the age of Aquarius, we move out of this domineering, competitive, patriarchal society, and we move into a different, some people would say go back to an old culture we were, but really it's like coming into a new culture, which is a culture where we are paying attention to emotions. We give validity to emotions. We are paying attention to deferring thoughts instead of one fact. There is what works for the whole instead of what works for the one, like those kind of things, right? So to me, the reason why we don't listen to intuition is because it is an inconvenient truth. I think that, I mean, I've seen it so many times. And where you see intuition used a lot, where people are believed, is people who are in positions of power inside of companies, right? CEOs, you know, you see the crazy wild CEOs, people like John Mackey, who started Whole Foods, met that guy years ago, interesting guy. And he talked a bit about, he had a vision in his head of people having access to healthy food and like being able to trace the origin of the food they ate. And like, mm-hmm. that's where Whole Foods started, right? It became something much bigger, right? But that's where it started. Elon Musk had this idea for a luxury electric car. People thought he was crazy. They were like, nobody wants a luxury electrical car, Elon, but he had this vision of it, right? So that's often where you hear people talk about like vision or purpose. So intuitive decision-making is not about facts, because facts require evidence. Evidence requires data. So intuition, intuitive decision-making, and intuitive intelligence comes from a place of possibility. So to me, what I say often is like, when you have a really clear intention and you're not attached, but you get really like excited about something, like inspired by something, that's often your intuition. The muse, as writers call it, it's like that moment of inspiration really is your intuition. And often we listen to that, but when we go on a date and we have just this really like agitated, uncomfortable feeling in our body about going on the date, we can't tell the difference between like the data, everything looked good. He looks like his picture. He showed up on time. He's got a decent job. He doesn't sound messed up. Like, why am I? I'm just nervous because, you know, maybe I smell bad. Maybe I'm feeling a little self-conscious, but we don't trust that feeling because it doesn't go with data-driven decision-making. So that all by itself could be like a 4-hour conversation, because I've helped people unwind why you wouldn't trust. In the book I'm writing right now, an entire chapter is dedicated to why we don't listen. Because it's not like we're not hearing it, we're just ignoring it. And there's different reasons we ignore it. Sometimes our inner noise is too loud, and our inner noise can come from like, women shouldn't da 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 da, men shouldn't da 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 da. That you shouldn't spend money of that amount on this. You shouldn't go on vacation if you don't have this much in the bank. You like all the shoulds and shouldn'ts we have based on rules we learned. You shouldn't be honest with people when they ask you a direct question if they have power over your position. It's like all the rules, right? And so all of that really influences our willingness to listen. That's the inner noise. And then there's all the outer noise. And there's a lot of outer noise. You know, it's like when you stand up and say something that people don't agree with and they're like, that's stupid. Why would you say that? You can, if you don't have a lot of inner noise, hear the outer noise and go, yeah, I hear you, but like, get over yourself. This is my truth and I'm speaking my truth. But mostly we don't live in a society where people are allowed to speak their truth if their truth goes against data. So that's, I mean, without getting like philosophical about it. And I say that I'm the founder of Simple Spirit, but I'm also Simple Spirit's philosopher. And this whole thing about intuitive decision-making, intuitive intelligence, intuitive decision, like that versus data, is about a philosophy of life, because it's actually, you're living a different kind of life if you live intuitively. You're running a different kind of business if you're running it intuitively. You are a different kind of employee if you are being an employee intuitively, because you're not operating from what you're told. You're not operating from what you learned. You're not operating from what you know from your experience and education. You're operating from what is so and what's present right in front of you. So, always thinking about reading books about and having conversations with people, other philosophers in different, you know, different disciplines, other scientists and other disciplines, and I ask a lot of questions about why do we think that we're data-driven decision-making? And it's cultural. So it's definitely Western culture is data driven for sure. The friends and clients in Eastern culture, and it's not as data driven. It's more people driven. I have clients and friends in South America. They're more data driven. I mean, more people driven. Like any culture where it's an us culture versus an I culture, they tend to be more intuitive in their decision-making.
Oh, there's so much I want to unpack right now. I love it. Oh, I want to like go deep in like four different areas right now. One quick observation of something that you said that was an aha for me was that these visions of these, you know, grand leaders that we hear about are really just intuition. Right? Because at that point, they don't really have anything else to go on. And we accept that when they're in this position of power. It is okay for a person in a position of power who has somehow proven their, you know, right to be there, to have this vision and have this intuition, and we don't question them for having it. So one thing. Two, I also heard in something that you said that when we have an intuition, and please correct me if I'm off base here, if we have an intuition, but there's something telling us that it's wrong, we can turn that in on ourselves and be like, you're dumb. Like, why did you even think that? And I so have experienced that myself, and something we need to be aware of, because how many things are we shooting down, you know, in ourselves that could be game changers? Like, we have just as much a right, and we have to stop ourselves from shooting them down as, you know, Elon Musk or whomever.
Yeah. What is her name? She wrote Untamed.
Glennon Doyle.
Glennon Doyle. Thank you. Glennon Doyle in Untamed talks about, she calls it her inner voice, and she has to get really quiet and it like it's talking to her. All of our intuition works a little bit differently, but that's one way you could think about it is, I talk about it like noise. That's often what I say, is that we have internal noise, and some of our internal noise is, excuse me, is not just from our training, like our education, like, you know, public education or our higher education or our experience in jobs and watching, like we're gathering data points, right? So that becomes our sort of inner guidebook for what's okay and what's not okay. But the other thing that happens to us is there's trauma. Right? We have childhood trauma. We have wounds from being hurt or being heartbroken. And so we will meet someone, and this happens to clients all the time. They meet someone like amazing. And they're like, yeah, no, but did you, I mean, look at his car. And I'm like, what are you talking about? They're like, someone who lets their car get that dirty, it just makes me distrust them. And I'm like, what? Like, where is that coming from? Like, what are you talking about? And sometimes we do that to ourselves. We're like, well, this job could be really good, except that, you know, it's 5 miles really out of my way. So, you know, what I said I really wanted was to work within 20 minutes of my house, and this one will make it more like 30. It's probably just not a good fit. Like your intuition could hear your list of like check boxes of things and go like, it's about the date. That's all about data. But if you're checking in with yourself, what you're actually doing is asking yourself the question, what is it that I'm actually intending? What do I actually want? Like, what's important to me? And if what's important to you is your checklist, then that's what you're going to follow. But if what's important is like a culture, you know, a company culture that really works for you and making the kind of money you want to, you'll drive an extra 15 minutes out of your way to take the job if it feels like it's in an alignment. But if we have too much inner noise, right? Or either outer noise, right? Other people's opinions. We've been trained to ask people we see as experts, whether it's our parents or doctors or lawyers or reading books, right? I'm a huge reader. I probably read 40 to 50 books a year about all different kinds of topics. And there are lots of different kinds of experts about lots of different kinds of things, or so they say. And then, you know, and if you assess expertise to people, you would probably, and it's very, very common because I know I've done it myself, I give my power in that moment away to somebody else. And then I listen to what they say instead of what that thing Glennon Doyle calls like your quiet inner voice, you know, your inner knowing, your inner understanding. So
that sounds risky, what you just said, giving away your power.
I think it can be,
you know, based on, I mean, yes, there are people who are highly educated in their work and, you know, are worthy of respect.
Yeah, of course.
But there are also times I can imagine that your intuition is just screaming at you and you just tell, you know, like, I don't know, with a doctor or, you know, with your boss. Yeah. And you just tell your intuition to shut up. Well, this person's clearly smarter than me, but they're not.
Right, right. And sometimes smarts is based on how we measure things, and measurement is a byproduct of being a data-driven decision maker. So smarts, like, oh, they're smarter than me. Well, how are we defining smarter? Like, do they have greater education than I do? They have more experience than I do. They've been with the company longer than I have, right? I mean, every single person who's ever had any job has been hired and worked under somebody who's been there a million years, and they trained you. And as you got trained, you were just like, oh my God, they hate this. They hate this job. They literally hate this job. They've told me every bad thing about every person who works here. Like, and they're my trainer and they're like supposed to get me excited about working here. Oh, this is not, that's not good. So then if you're trusting yourself, you're like, wait, wait, that's just that one person, but it feels good here. Like, I trust myself. This was the right job to take. But if you don't trust yourself, then all of a sudden you're like, did I say yes to the wrong job? Like, am I in a shithole company now? Uh-oh, that's not
right. So let's shift into that a little bit and talk about just intuition in the workplace, right? So let's assume in that scenario that you were just talking about that you're like, no, this is the right place. This is a good culture. How does intuition show up in like a typical meeting?
So I worked for a company years ago. This is before I started my business. And we would do these meetings with like the three, the VP, the president, the VP, and like the head of one of these departments. And then, cause I was like the secretary, this was as I was building my business, I was like a secretary at the front desk. So I would be there, and then all of their executive admins would be there. And one time I was at a meeting, and this is not a story about my intuition, by the way. This is a story about my boss's intuition. So we're all sitting there, and the woman who did like the request for proposals, and she would fill out the information, she brought in and gave one to every one of us. And we all start looking at this, and I'm like, immediately I'm like taking a pen, cause I thought these were copies to like, I thought we were editing. That was what was on the agenda. And so like, I take a pen and I start making notes, and the woman was like, what are you doing? And I was like, I'm so sorry. I thought we were editing and making notes. And, and she got very angry, very upset, because I was just the receptionist, right? Like, what am I doing editing on her important piece? She's been at this company for 10 years. And my direct boss said, and she had said something to me when I first started. She had said to me, watch out for this woman because she is really protective of her job. So just know she gets a little bit edgy about things. So she had already told me that, but in this meeting, everybody walked out of the room, right? Like after that interaction, it was very awkward. And my boss and I are sitting across from each other. And she said, she goes, are there, like, I've been noticing that there are misspellings in all of her things. Is that, why do you think that is? She was just asking me the question. And I was like, I'm not totally certain. I don't know. Like, maybe she's not double checking it. And she said, do you think somebody else is writing it for her? And I remember thinking to myself, and I was like, what do I say? So I just said, what makes you think that? Like, why are you asking me that? And she goes, I don't know. It's just a feeling I have. Now it's like a feeling that I just like, it's an uncomfortable feeling. But in that meeting, she said it came to me today that in this meeting, as she's talking, how she talks And then these things that she writes, they don't match. And I was like, oh, interesting. So I didn't know what, I mean, I was the receptionist for God's sake. So I didn't say anything, went back to my desk to answer the phone and people coming into the office. And she did a little investigative reporting on her own because she knew that she wasn't going to be able to bring it to her. She worked for the VP. She was the executive assistant for the VP. She could not bring this to him about this other woman unless she actually had done her research. So she went and researched, and lo and behold, this woman was plagiarizing other companies' like proposals.
Ooh.
And like, and she actually like printed three proposals she found online that this woman had printed from. And you could tell because there was not quite enough changes, right? And so she just, that's often how it shows up, is you have like, for her in particular, it showed up as this, like she, the way she described it is, I have this thought and this thought won't go away. It keeps coming back. And the thought was, she said she thought it was, she was just being judgmental. That's what she had told me, is like, I just notice when we're in these meetings and I hear her speak, her speaking doesn't match the writing. And she's like, I don't know why it bugged me, but it bugged me. It just kept coming back to me. Every meeting I'd have this thought. She's like, I've been having this thought for a year. And every time I had the thought, I thought, I'm being super judgmental. That's not very nice of me. Some people have a casual way of speaking and a more formal way of writing. But finally, with us sitting there and me making some edits on the paper, like it didn't make sense to me the way she was writing this. I have a degree in English. I have a bachelor's in English. And I thought that's why I was in the meeting. That gave her permission to finally say it out loud to somebody. This is weird, but I have this thought, like, that those two things don't match. Now, that's often how knowing works. You don't know why you know that. You just know it.
Well, and what I think's interesting is that she chased it down finally.
Yeah. She finally trusted it to chase it down. And what she told me later, like 4 months later, the only reason what finally had me trust it is she was so frustrated with you, like me, in that meeting, because you were saying, because what I said to her was, this paragraph don't flow. It feels like you copied and pasted from already existing proposals, but I meant her proposals, right? That's all I said. And she's like, you saying that gave me permission to like put my suspicion to the test. She was like, she got weirdly upset. She was like, she got over the top upset. And that made me, like, where there had been this knowing, I was all of a sudden full on suspicious. Now I was going to have to check it out. Like, cause now that her reaction didn't make any sense. So what it often looks like is you're in a meeting and you're having a thought, and depending on how you work, right? For her, she was an emotional intuitive, what I call a heart, like she's heart oriented. So how her intuition works is through tapping into and paying attention to emotions. So what she was actually tapping into, if I say now from this side of things, she thought she was paying attention to what she was saying, like how she was speaking, and then how her proposals looked and how the language didn't match. But my sense is, when you read the proposals, how they felt, like the emotional or the mood of the writing didn't match Lorna's mood. The moods didn't match. It was weird, right? I think that's what she was tapping into. And that's what had her ask that question. So if you're a heart-oriented person, for you, it's going to look like something related to emotion. If you're a mind-oriented person, that's me, then for me, it's like something in trying to understand and piece things together and connect dots, that won't make sense if something is off. If you're a body, more oriented body person, then it's just like, when something is off, you just can't like get settled. Like your body feels off.
Yeah. And I assume that you can be all of those things.
Of course.
And maybe even depending on the context, like maybe when it comes to a certain person,
that's incredibly insightful. Yeah. For my family, total heart intuitive, like all about the emotions, tracking all the emotions, but otherwise outside of my family context, mind oriented. So when people take the test, it actually like tells you what kind of orientation you are. And then it tells you how your body translates, because there are four ways our body translates. So when you know those two things together, then you could be in a meeting and go like, oh, I'm heart oriented. So I'm paying attention to emotions, but I'm a knower. So I know something is off, like something's off. That's often where you are more likely. And this is, I've just seen this so many times. I feel like I can say it, but mostly we pay attention to the things that don't feel right or feel off. We're more likely to notice that than we are the converse, which is that something feels right. So if you're willing to pay attention to that, what will show up in the meeting is what someone's saying doesn't make sense to you. And you're like, can you explain that again? And you've asked them to explain it 8 times and you feel really dense, but yet still what they're saying doesn't make sense. The words, you could write the words out. You hear the words, you know the definitions, but something about what they're saying does not sound right. I had another client at her company. They were rolling out a new HR directive, and this was a big company. And so she worked in the sales department with engineers. So they, you know, bring everybody in. It's like 150 people in like kind of their conference center, big center. And the HR director starts saying, this is what we're going to do. And she kept saying the thing she was saying. And this client of mine was like, that doesn't sound right. And so she like raised her hand like 4 times. I'm really sorry, but could you repeat what you just said? Because I'm not understanding. And like everybody in the room groaned, right? Because you can imagine being in a meeting. It's a Friday afternoon. And this woman's like asked 4 times. Everybody's like, ugh, right? But something didn't sound right to her. Well, you fast forward 2 months, and what they were basically doing without actually directly saying it is they were cutting people's pensions and then using that money to put back into the company to like grow the company, like to open up into a new, what would you call that, new market? But like what they were talking about was the new market. And then the HR directive was from now on, da 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 da. And she was like, she said, you know, there's a room of 149 people who this made sense to. She was like, no way. She's like, I'm not the only person who was listening to this and it didn't sound right, but I was the only person who was willing to say something. So they called her a whistleblower and she had to go to court and got sued and all this stuff.
Wow.
Because she heard something, right? Like it didn't sound right to her.
Yeah. I like what you said too, though, about the converse. Like, because when you were talking about, you know, your meeting with your former boss and the plagiarizer, I was also thinking about how powerful that could be on the opposite side. When you keep having this, like your boss did, like you keep having this idea, you keep having this like, oh, this could work. But well, nobody else seems to hear that, or no one else seems to be having that idea. And so you start questioning yourself. And I want to go here. And then if we have time, also, I want to ask about gender difference and squashing those ideas. But I want to go first to, I mean, it seems like if we learn how to tap into that, then there are many of these ideas that don't just float on by. How do we get brave with that?
I actually think it's about habit. So to me, the answer to that question, I think it's got two small parts. One part is practice, because what you're doing is you're returning yourself to a place of trusting your initial impression in something and not second guessing it. So there was once upon a time that you did that, and then you stopped doing that for whatever reason, and you've never gone back to it. So to go back to being an intuitive decision maker takes practice, because you're building a habit. You are building new neural pathways, and you are rewriting the pathways that tell you to assess, you know, authority outside of yourself. So that's one. The other is, I would say it's like anything else. You have to get over whatever the fear is that's stopping you. So, you know, sometimes the work I do with people is I really train them to listen to their intuition, but sometimes the work I do is we unravel why they are distrusting themselves. So that's always, to me, if you're listening to this podcast with Melissa and I, and you're like, I have these great ideas, but I don't bring them up to my boss because I don't want to get shot down. I would say, ask yourself the question, what are you afraid of? Because the what you're afraid of is the thing that's stopping you from saying something.
So, ooh, I love this. So one of the things we talk about frequently on the podcast is, what do you do if you're the leader of one of these wild hearts? And maybe you're not so wild-hearted yourself anymore. Maybe you once were. Mm-hmm. But what is the best way that a leader can, especially one who might be a little bit more, you know, traditional, can respond if I've come to them with this intuition, with this, like, I've got this great idea and it keeps coming up for me. What's the best way for them to respond if they're not quite tapped into intuition yet themselves?
I think one of the most important things a leader can do is be curious.
Yes.
Like cultivating curiosity. To me, like, you can interchange other words, curiosity, willingness, openness. Like, some of the best leaders I know, and I've met some really extraordinary leaders, they are open and curious. So, like, sometimes it's helpful to know if you're the employee and your employer, right? Your boss, find out like how they learn things. Are they more audio? Like, they listen auditorily, that's how they learn, or they're more visual, or are they more kinesthetic? Like, they would do better if you said, want to go for a walk with me? I have a great idea. But before you bring the idea to them, like, find out how they learn things and you can kind of watch it, right? Like, if someone explains something to them with a lot of words and they're like, wait, that's like too many words, probably kinesthetic, or they're probably more visual. If they're the kind of person who was always standing in front of the whiteboard because they have to draw out everything they're saying, those are visual people. So it makes a difference in doing that as well, is like, bring to them your idea in a way that at the very least will translate for them. And then if you're a leader, your best way is to be open, like cultivate curiosity.
I just had a very interesting aha, a bunch of things that connected for me. So if I have this like spectacular intuition, this idea that keeps coming to me, when I think about your former boss, she chased it down. Right? The evidence existed. The data existed. She just didn't have it yet.
Correct.
So maybe the way that I approach my leader is to say, I have this intuition and I wonder if you would come on this journey to me to find the evidence for it, because I believe that the evidence exists. And if you're curious enough, you know, let's chase this down and see what we can find. Because I think a lot of times in the corporate world, the anxiety is around like, well, this is just some, you know, idea that you had, but to put it out there that like, I believe there is data for this. Elon Musk believed there was data to prove people wanted an electric car, you know? So, you know, maybe the way to approach it is to acknowledge that we need the data. We just don't have it yet.
Yeah.
So let's go on a walk and talk about how we might get it.
Yeah. Fundamentally, data-driven decision-making is not bad, because you do actually sometimes need some data. Like, you need specs before you build an app. The idea for the app is the idea, right? It's that inspired idea, but you do then actually need data, like how long and the budget and the specs and the who it's for. And like, but to me, I think what you're pointing to, which goes back to the original thing we were talking about, which is, why do we think people don't listen to intuition? And I said, we live in a dominating or domineering like culture, is that collaboration is sorely missing. And when a boss, like leadership, being open, willing, and receptive, like being in that kind of space of curiosity allows for collaboration. So if someone has an idea and the other person is a cheerleader for new ideas, and chase it down, like, let's see what happens. That's actually when innovation happens. Like, I can think of 15 examples of innovation. Yeah.
Yeah. Love that.
Question about gender before we run out of time. You were asking, you wanted to ask.
Yes.
Now you have me intrigued.
I know. It's okay. We might have a long podcast today. That's quite all right. I'm just curious, and maybe this is given my own experience, but have you found in your experience that gender plays a role, or gender roles even, you know, we won't get to that person's specific gender, but just how we have been trained within our assigned gender plays a role in whether or not we trust our intuition.
That's not, I wish it was simple. It's not simple. It's complex. So yes and no. So yes, in that, we ascertain or like we attach incorrectly, like an incorrect perception. We sometimes attach certain things to certain genders. So like in a meeting, and if you were with two executives and one was, male, like they themselves relate to themselves as male and the other one, you know, female, what you'll find is not universal, and that the female will talk more about feelings and the male will talk more about like your gut. It's more about culture. So in my experience, startups, like in general, startups is a place where people can talk about really crazy ideas and feelings and like go and pivot and do the crazy thing, because in that space, it's kind of expected, right? But if you're in corporate, like a very large company, like a 1,000 person company or more, you're going to find the higher ups talking about like their gut about something. Like my gut tells me, and then they'll back it up with evidence. So to me, it's not about gender or even gender roles. It can be, but it's also about cultural environment, like what, you know, what industry you're in and what size company you work for. My mom was an oncology nurse and she had a lot of permission to be intuitive with patients because she was a patient advocate. So she was the person, she was a caseworker. So she was the person between the hospital, the patient, the insurance. So she was like the person who advocated for their care, and she was very intuitive. Her job could be very intuitive. However, the insurance people that she dealt with, not as much, because it was a very like really large insurance companies. Yeah.
No, that makes sense. That was definitely a leading question on my part.
It's a fair one. It's a fair
one. I think this is shifting in my opinion, in my experience. I think in, you know, maybe even just in my mom's generation,
100%.
People like her, identify as female, have been trained up in society as a female. Oh, you're too emotional. You're too like, that's just a feeling that you have. That's not real. Mm-hmm. And I think there's still, you know, in our generation, some vestiges of that. But I do believe, to your point, I do think it's changing in a positive way.
Yeah.
And can be very dependent on just your general environment, regardless of, you know, whatever gender roles exist around you. So that's fair.
Well, that's good. I mean, it spoke to the experience you and I have had, right? Gender wise, like people ask me all the time, are women more naturally intuitive than men? I get that asked that question all the time. And the people who ask me that question, it sort of identifies their bias that emotions have more to do like feelings, like, oh, that's an extra sensory perception. It's like, that's what intuition is, but it's not. That's not all of what intuition is. That's my husband's intuition. He's a heart intuitive who feels. I'm a mind intuitive who sees and hears. So mine sounds really logical and concrete. That's just how my intuition works. His is a lot like, you know, something feels wrong. This doesn't feel right. Like that, but they're both valid. They just, and it's not gender, right?
Right.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. Well, and that's a good point too. That's why I kept going back to the training piece of it. My husband is also incredibly feeling intuitive, but most of his life, he's been told, well, that's not what boys do, you know, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And so for a long time, he has suppressed that in himself. And I actually, you know, especially in a community that supports a podcast called Wild Hearts at Work, you know, there are a number of men who are just allowing this to sort of come alive in themselves.
Right.
And a number of women that are, for different reasons, And then that's also very binary in its own way. And I don't mean it to be, but I mean, I think all of us have been kind of told for different reasons to, you know, kind of tell it all to shut up. So.
Oh yeah. I mean, when I had thoughts or ideas that were very intuitive, I was told I was being too bossy and being a know-it-all, right? Just like my husband being pretty sensitive and really emotional was told that he was being a sissy.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So it's that, it's exactly what it is, binary. However, we have to, I mean, you can't not talk about something like this and not address that we live in such a binary, heteronormative, you know, American culture that has very constructed ways that we're allowed to be, allowed to speak, allowed to respond, allowed to act. All of those things, you couldn't have made a more valid, like highlighting, you know, with the landing strip and the beep, 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 kind of like perfect ending thing, which is that intuition is a gift, is like a gift that all of us have. It's a skill we all have. It looks different for each of us based on our likes, dislikes, training, our the individual way it works, and has nothing to do with where we're born and what genitalia we have and the amount of money we have or where we work. Like, not all those other things are an aside. What is like the core of it is everybody has access to their intuitive intelligence, and you can become an intuitive decision maker. Everybody can. And when you do, what it does is it opens you up to possibility and has you be in alignment with your own truth. So whether you use it in dating or you use it to get out of a job that sucks, you can do that, right? Because you're tapped into your own truth. So
smash those boxes, friends.
Yes!
Smash the boxes is what I am taking away from this episode.
Yes, exactly.
That's a beautiful landing, Shoshana. So for our listeners who are now incredibly intrigued, and I know they are, how can they find you? How can they find out more about your work? And how can they get in touch with you?
The easiest way to find me is simplespirit.com. Melissa talked about the website. On the website is the test. You'll see it. Simplespirit.com. Easy to find me. If you're on social media, you can find me at Shoshana French Stokes for Instagram. You can also find me there on Facebook as well. And really though, if you find yourself super intrigued by this conversation, your best first step is go take the intuitive blueprint assessment so you can discover how your intuition works. That's the best first step.
I love it so much. And I will put all of that information in the show notes. So if you are listening and you need those links, you can go to the show notes. Shoshana, this has been, first of all, the longest podcast I've done because I didn't want to stop talking or listening in this case. So thank you so much for everything that you shared with us and just for the work that you do. I think it is so important to where we're going as a world that we smash these boxes and we learn how to be intuitive decision makers. So we appreciate you so much.
Thank you, Melissa. I appreciate it.
All right. Well, for the rest of you, thank you for joining us again this week. Hope you took something away from this that takes you into your very next meeting. I hope this is one of those very practical episodes that now changes the way you look at the rest of your day. So just a reminder, we do have a Patreon. If you want to support the show, check that out. That is also in the show notes. But until next time, dear hearts, stay wild.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Wild Hearts at Work. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe and share. For more resources and to connect with Melissa, visit melissaboggs.com. Also, if you or someone you know is doing great work in a wild way, get in touch about being a guest on the show. Until next time.